Good morning, Carmel. You're listening to Off the Wall Live on WHJE. I'm Maggie Paul, and I'm here with Jack Missler, J.D. Arland, and our superintendent, Dr. Wall. We're going to start off today with the news headlines.
Thank you, Maggie, and good morning, Dr. Wall.
Good morning.
How are you doing this fine Tuesday?
Fantastic. Got some interesting weather and some interesting times in Iowa, so
that's
looking forward to the conversation.
Last night, the Iowa caucus took place. Very big night, one of probably the most nail-biting Iowas we've seen in a long time. The clear winner on the Republican side, Ted Cruz at least, coming in about 4 points ahead of second place Trump, followed by Rubio. Do you think this marks the beginning of the end for the Trump presidential bid?
I don't think so. Based upon everything, you know, the pundits and, you know, as we were talking pre-show, we both stayed up too late listening to this stuff and watching this stuff. It looks like Cruz had, in their words, foot soldiers out in Iowa to get the evangelical and base rallied around him. Mm-hmm. And in a caucus environment, it wasn't surprising that Trump didn't fare well because he has no base and no connection to the old Republican guard. So I think it'll play out over the next month to see if there is any traction. I think the thing that Cruz and Rubio want is momentum,
yeah.
You know, and Rubio probably got more than Cruz, honestly, because, you know, in the primary they're going to run far left, run far right, then pray you can get to the middle.
Yeah,
Rubio's probably the most centric of the three, so we'll see where everything lands. But it's entertaining. If politics is supposed to be.
Yeah.
And frustrating but entertaining and clear message that the American people are not liking the status quo.
Exactly. And, you know, fourth place came to a name we haven't heard much about lately, Ben Carson.
Yes.
He seems to have been someone who's kind of faded out of the political spectrum, but did place fairly well in Iowa. Fourth, we also saw Mike Huckabee drop out.
Yep.
So I'm thinking once we get through New Hampshire, Super Tuesday, start going into the South for these caucuses and elections, we'll start seeing more and more of the Republican field narrowing to, I would imagine, the three of Cruz, Rubio, and Trump.
Yeah, it is shaping up that way. I mean, what's amazing, in June, when Trump came down the golden escalator and announced, even by his own admission, I saw an interview with him the night before last. They asked him point blank, it was actually the Sunday show, did you think you'd be here at this time? And he said, frankly, no.
Yeah.
And in June, everybody thought Jeb Bush would be, you know, the annoying next Bush, and he's not even on the radar.
Yeah.
So it's interesting times.
Well, and shifting to the Democrat side, the closest caucus ever for the Democrats. Hillary with a 0.6% lead over Bernie, decided by a coin toss. Hillary claimed victory and no one's disputed that. But it is a close victory nonetheless.
Yes.
You talk about splitting the vote. What do you think the Clinton campaign's doing now?
Well, I mean, it was interesting because they were talking about Hillary was probably hoping that the young female voter didn't come out yesterday in the caucus because that demographic has gravitated to the Sanders camp, which is very, you know, ironic, interesting, whatever term you want to use. And you look at Bernie Sanders' campaign contributions, the average contribution he's received to his fund is $27.
Yeah.
So he is absolutely grassroots, tapped into the youth and those who are disgruntled with government. So it's going to be an uphill battle for Bernie Sanders. Remove the politics. I'm not going to talk about whether I gravitate towards his political views, but he has definitely connected with the young demographic, and the key is, will they vote? Because historically they don't.
Well, and that was the thing. I was talking earlier with some of my classmates, and they were saying to me, you know, Sanders has the, he's killing it in the 18 to 44 demographic.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, but the 18 to 44 demographic is also the lowest percentage of voters.
Correct.
You know, the highest voters are the older people.
Absolutely. I mean, really,
the retirement homes, those senior communities, they are the ones who vote. So it'll be interesting to see. And I was also, you were talking about finance. I was looking up, and what amazed me was, you know, like you said, the average Sanders support is within the $20 or $30,
mm-hmm.
And he's only $3 million behind Hillary,
right,
in total funding.
Exactly,
which is people think, oh, Hillary's got all this extra money. She really doesn't. She may get it in larger sums, but when you put them side by side, their war chests are very, very similar.
Right, and when you put it in that context, it really strikes at, if you would just go to the volume of contributions, not the net, but the individual contributions of Bernie Sanders, because Hillary's gotten the PAC money, it's just astounding that his campaign's been able to raise that much money with so many literally small contributions to his efforts.
And I mean, he's setting all sorts of campaign records for, you know, finances, in terms of he's not getting these super PACs to write him these big checks. But it is going to be interesting to see, as, you know, this is probably one of the closest races we've seen. Now, one thing I do like to point out, and this always is important to me, the election's not till November.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there is still plenty of time left in this. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how New Hampshire plays out, and then Super Tuesday and all these things. And, you know, we'll get vice presidential candidates to come in. So all this to really look forward to.
Interesting sidebar. Michael Bloomberg has deployed a committee or a team to review, a study team to review his potential to run for president. It was in the New York Times on Sunday. To run for president in the event that, you know, their Democrat and Republican aren't what he believes they should be, which is just an interesting side story.
Well, and I had a TV show the other day where I was discussing the Bloomberg thing exactly, and we were saying, you know, this Bloomberg has the potential to be very similar to a Ross Perot, almost, of, you know, taking away that New England Democrat vote from whoever the establishment candidate is. And if he runs as a third party, it could play a significant role in a Democratic candidate's for presidency.
Right.
Just because he does have such a strong New England base. And he was, during his time in New York, he had high approval ratings. I mean, people
Absolutely.
Liked him. So it'll be interesting to see. I wouldn't buy my Bloomberg for president bumper sticker yet.
I wouldn't either.
I don't know. I think he'll get a phone call from someone at the DNC and ask him politely to try again next year.
We'll let this play out, though.
Keep an eye on it.
Yeah. It's kind of a side story.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's all the news I have for today. Thank you, Dr. Wall. Back to you, Maggie.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to take a short break, but stay tuned for J.D. Arlen with our sports news coming up next. You're listening to Off the Wall on 91.3 WHJE. Here's From a Window Seat by Dawes. Welcome back. You're listening to Off the Wall on 91.3. We're here with our superintendent, Dr. Wall, and right now, J.D. Arlen has our sports update.
Thank you, Maggie. Thank you, Dr. Wall, for coming. Happy Groundhog's Day.
Absolutely.
Big holiday in the continental United States. Punxsutawney Phil, of course, predicting that we have an early spring ahead. No more 6 weeks of winter. We were on a 3 losing stretch with that, where we had winter for 6 weeks, 3 years in a row. But now, do you think it's going to be accurate?
Well, if history would be any indicator of the future, we'd say no, because he's wrong more than he's right. Kind of like the political pundits are. Some of our sports pontificators. So probably not. But fact of the matter is, we've had very little winter. So time will tell.
Looking forward to
Groundhog's Day. We'll do this over again, just like the show.
Well, another national holiday just ahead, I would say, is Super Bowl Sunday coming up in just a few days from now. Everybody knows who's in. It's the Broncos versus the Panthers, and we were 50% right last show in both choosing the Panthers. Do you have a pick now that we've narrowed it down to two? Who do you think's going to walk away with the ring?
I'm going to have to go with the loyalty vote to Broncos and Peyton Manning, and obviously their defense. No one predicted their defense to show up and shut down New England and Tom Brady and Bill Belichick last weekend. I mean, that was frankly shocking that they had such a tremendous defensive effort just to throw. Brady was off stride all day. So I'm going to go with Broncos.
I would love to see that. I'd love to see Peyton Manning walk away from what many predict to be his last game with the title. That would be an accomplishment like no other. And, you know, to give you credit, the Broncos have beat the Ravens. They've beat the Vikings. They beat Matthew Stafford and the Lions. Aaron Rodgers, Jay Cutler, Phillip Rivers, and most recently Tom Brady.
Right.
Von Miller, of course, coming in huge in that game with 3 sacks. So I think they definitely have the defense to stack up against Cam Newton and his possible offense.
I think so, too. Wade Phillips as the defensive coordinator, longtime NFL head coach, as well as defensive coordinator in the beginning of his career at Denver during the Elway days. So he's kind of come full circle. And having Gary Kubiak back, who was the backup quarterback, John Elway back in the day. Just a lot of things coming together for Denver. And I just have a vibe. I think they're going to play really well.
It'd be nice. But I can't do it. I can't say that I don't think the Panthers are going to win. Because if you look at this season, they've been completely dominant. Cam Newton has the league highest scoring. He leads the league highest scoring offense, 31.3 points per game. And you talk about undefeated or nearly undefeated teams a lot, and you say, oh, well, they haven't played anyone good. They haven't really been tested. But they have.
Correct.
They've played everybody in the NFC, of course, but they have really come out this year and shown how dominant they are. The one loss they had was almost a fluke against Atlanta.
Yeah, Atlanta, yeah. And you've got to give Ron Rivera, the head coach, all kinds of, not only for his XO credit for the XO part of the game, but for coaching the talent that he has to their specific skill set. I mean, if you think of Cam Newton came in and everybody thought he was going to be, you know, have a stellar career. He flashed and then he faded, if we all remember. And under Coach Rivera, he has just blossomed. I mean, because I think Coach Rivera let him play his game to his talent. And most importantly, let him play to his personality. Because everybody's seen his personality come out. Some don't like it, some do. But at the end of the day, you know, when a person comes to work every day like he does and feels good about where he's working, you're seeing a productive Carolina Panther team, and I give Ron Rivera all kinds of credit for that.
He's one of the best to coach and one of the best to play. A former member of the Chicago Bears.
Absolutely.
Speaking of players that might be a little bit outdated, Peyton Manning, we've got, you know, he's coming into this game 39 years old. We all heard what he said to Bill Belichick, that this might be his last rodeo.
Right.
What are you thinking? Do you think this is going to be the last time that Peyton Manning laces up?
According to his dad, Archie, yesterday, he doesn't even know. But I would say yes. I mean, I don't know that he can continue. I mean, oldest quarterback to play in the Super Bowl will be Peyton Manning. We saw, you know, injuries with his foot this year and other injuries that you just, this game is not forgiving. It doesn't let you come back. And for him to leave the game, hopefully as the Super Bowl champion, would just be fantastic. But to be in it, I think, would still be a positive mark on his career. And at the end of the day, he's got a family, and I think he'd like to be able to have some quality time with his family, and I hope he gets that. So I think we are seeing him for the last time on Sunday.
I would certainly hope he could go out with a bang, and I'm going to have to agree with you. I think this is the last time he's going to play. Like you said, I couldn't have said it better myself. It's unforgiving. It's not a sport you can play well into your old age, so I think this might be the last time we see Peyton Manning, so it's going to be a game to look out for. Closing up, do you have a prediction, a final score for the game? What's your point spread?
Well, that's a good question. I'm going to say 24-20 Broncos.
It's not impossible. I think I mean, I think it's possible. I'm going to have to say that the Panthers are going to win this one by 14. I don't know what the final score is going to be, and I can't make a claim because the Broncos have had such a stellar defense, and the Panthers have had such a great offense. And you look at the inverse of that, it's also true. I mean, these teams are so evenly matched that I think a lot of points are going to be scored. But I think Carolina's been more productive on offense, and that's why they're going to win by 14. ESPN is predicting just 6. They're giving Carolina
spread right now.
56% chance of taking home the title. And we will see that Super Bowl will air at 7 p.m. on CBS on Sunday. You can catch it. I know I will be watching. Dr. Wall, that's all the time we have for sports.
Thanks
so much for joining us. We'll send it back to Maggie.
Right after this break, we'll have our guests Lizzie Barker and Molly Frank on to talk about the IU Honors Program. Stay tuned to Off the Wall on WHJE. Here's Ride On, Ride On by Phosphorescent. This is Off the Wall on WHJE. Today we have Lizzie Barker and Molly Frank on the show to talk about IU Honors. How are you guys today?
Good. How are
good,
you?
I'm doing well. So can we just start off and can you tell me a little bit about like what the IU Honors program is and what you guys do with that?
Well, it's through Indiana University, and it's a immersion program for about 6 to 7 weeks. And you will be learning a target language. It's in many different languages. Me and Molly, we both were with Spanish, so we spoke Spanish the entire time, and we went to Mexico. There are many different places that you can go outside of the country.
Yeah. So what made you like interested in trying out the program?
Well, I love Spanish, and I love Spanish class, and my goal is to become fluent in Spanish because I love speaking it and being able to communicate with another culture, and I also love the Hispanic culture, so I was really excited to go on this, and I'm really glad I did.
For your classmates out there who, you know, really want to cross their T's and dot their I's, you do the IU Honors, and at the end of this time, you get a credit. Tell us about that.
I believe, for me, I just put it on my college application. You just say IU Honors Foreign Language Program.
Okay.
But I know you don't get school credits.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's more of experience to kind of fulfill, kind of enhance your portfolio, your resume, so to speak.
I really think of it as, like in Spanish class in high school, you don't really get to the point where you're speaking Spanish all the time. So this was truly immersion, and you're surrounded by Spanish, and you're also speaking Spanish yourself. So I really think there's no way better to learn a language than to do that.
So tell our listeners about the immersion. What, you know, we were talking about your access to internet, phone, texting, all the things that we take for granted as like part of our fabric, and text, you know, all the time. Tell us a little about the immersion program that you really had to be part of where you were in Mexico.
So basically, once you land in Mexico, you're only allowed to speak Spanish from there on. And it was really intimidating at first, and I know everyone was really scared, but you just have to be willing to try, and you see yourself improve a lot, and you're only allowed to speak Spanish. So the only time you're allowed to speak English is when you contact people at home through the internet, and you only have 1 hour per week. And at first, you think that's not enough time, but as the program continues, you realize that you don't really want to speak to anyone at home. You want to keep speaking Spanish, because once you speak a little bit of English, it's hard to get back. So we really enjoyed speaking Spanish, and even when we landed back in the U.S., we wanted to keep speaking Spanish.
Mm-hmm. So you were there for 7 weeks?
Yes.
So June to mid-July?
Yeah.
Okay. How have you been able to retain that fluency?
I tried my best to do that. I was really worried about that at the end of the program. I think since we're in a higher level Spanish, we really try, especially Molly and I, to speak Spanish throughout the classroom. We still contact our host family in Spanish through text message, so that also helps. I really just try to look for every opportunity. Especially in college, I really want to study Spanish as well. So,
that's neat. So, did you have some neat cultural experiences with the city you were in? And then we also obviously want to hear about the food. So anything you saw architectural or cultural that would be noteworthy to our listeners? And then let's get into the food, though.
Okay. So depending on where you go, you typically visit a lot of the popular places there. So we went to Chichen Itza. Where else did we go? We went to a lot of the beaches, a lot of the ruins. And it was really, really cool. And I'm glad we got to do that. But we also got to take part in a lot of activities in the town. We got to visit some small villages and do volunteer work there. So we got to see a lot of parts of Mexico that you wouldn't really imagine. So it was a really cool experience, and we learned a lot.
Yeah, the city that we went to in Mexico is really, I think, culturally rich. Like, you mainly think of Mexico as Cancun and all those beaches, but we really got to see kind of the Mayan roots. We saw a lot of ruins, and we were, like, the volunteer work, we were able to communicate with a town that not only was fluent in Spanish, was also fluent in Maya, which was really interesting to learn that language as well.
Mm-hmm. At any time on your trip, did you feel like you were in a situation that wasn't safe or secure?
Oh, we have a funny story about that, actually. So we had to go to school. We had to go to school there, but it was only for people in the program. So we had to take a bus there and back. And Lizzie and I, one time, we were taking the bus home, but we went the opposite. We took the bus that went the opposite way, and we didn't realize until after about 30 minutes, and we had to get off, and it was really scary because we had no idea where we were, so we called our host mom, and we knew we weren't in a safe part, but it was okay. Mexico, Merida is a really safe part of Mexico, so we knew we were okay, and yeah, our host parents came and picked us up, so it was okay. But it was a pretty crazy experience because we didn't know what to do. Yeah.
But you had communication back to the host, so you were good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, compare and contrast what we believe to be Mexican food in the States to what you experienced on a daily basis.
Well, the food is really fresh. They have a lot of fruits, especially that we can't find in the United States, a lot of tropical fruits. One of my favorite foods was called pitaya, which is dragon fruit here in the United States, but they really don't have those here in the United States, so we got to experience a lot of those different fruits that aren't available here.
Okay.
They definitely had the generic quesadillas, tortillas, but they were a lot more spicy and a lot more flavorful. Especially in the Yucatan, we got to experience a lot of food from that region, which was really different.
And the fruits, it's really noticeable how much fresher they are there than here. I ate a lot of avocado there and guacamole, and that's my favorite food now. But when I got back to the U.S., I realized how much richer the food was in Mexico, and the mangoes and everything is so much fresher and tasty, and I really miss that food.
You know, one of the things we take for granted in the United States generally is fresh water. Mm-hmm. Except in Flint, Michigan, and we wish them the best because they're going through a crisis up there right now, and it's just horrible how that situation deteriorated. But in general, when we hear of visitors to Mexico, the concern is fresh water. Did you experience any challenges with that?
I don't think so. Our family got fresh water out of kind of a big jug, and it didn't come out of, like, some people have water that comes out of the refrigerator. I'm not sure. They didn't really have I don't think water purifiers. They just had like a big jug of water that we got.
But you weren't turning on the sink and drinking out of the tap.
Yeah, that was
correct?
A concern at the beginning. But I mean, we brushed our teeth with that water, so there really wasn't
okay.
any stomach problems. But we didn't really drink the water from the sink directly because obviously that was a concern at the beginning. Our instructors told us not to do that just in case we got sick or anything like that because we weren't used to it.
Got it. So did you do anything that was just fun, leisure, like almost vacation-like, or were you basically plugged into school and the cultural aspects of your visit for 7 weeks?
Well, we had school Monday through Friday, and it ended at 2, so we could go home and eat with our families. And then we'd usually have an activity after that, whether it was sports. We played soccer with a lot of people who lived there, and that was a lot of fun. And we, over the weekend, on Saturdays, we did volunteer work, and then sometimes we would go on an excursion. We went to a few beaches, but they weren't the typical beaches that tourists go to. And on Sundays, it was time with the family, so we did whatever our family wanted to do. and our family had a house on a little private beach, and so that was really nice.
So temperature-wise, June to mid-July in Mexico, what was it like?
It was really, really hot. I don't think I could exaggerate that more. It's kind of gross, but
we never stopped sweating.
Yeah, Molly and I used to go for a lot of runs because we wanted to keep in shape with all the tortillas that we were eating. I think one time we got back from a run and our host mom asked us if we had taken a shower because we were sweating so much. It was extremely hot. We had to drink lots of water. It doesn't compare to here in the summer at all.
Mm-mm. So, but class every day was in air conditioning.
Yes.
But our house wasn't. We only had fans in our house.
Really?
So, yes. Sometimes in school it was too cold, which was kind of weird.
Yeah, because we had to bring jackets, but then it would get so hot outside.
Yeah.
But not in the host family house. There was no air.
I mean, they had air conditioning, but it's very expensive, so they never turned it on. We only had fans in our rooms. Mm-hmm. So...
Well, we're proud of you guys, number one, for qualifying to get this outstanding opportunity, and two, for completing it and sharing it with us and our listeners. That's for your colleagues and classmates out there, something to shoot for. Mm-hmm. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you guys for coming on. Thank you for listening to Off the Wall on 91.3. Tune in 3 weeks to listen to our next show on February 23rd. It's currently 11:08 and 40 degrees. You're listening to 91.3.